Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast brought to you by NBA 2K26. I know last week I told you we had a scheduling issue. We couldn't bring you the guest episode last week. So guess what? This week we're bringing you not one, but two guests. How about that? You know, Big Mo's never going to let you down. Please enjoy this episode. But before we get there, I do have a special message to share with all of you because the NBA season is well and truly underway. And you know, in between games, there's a lot of time you got to fill. And what better way to fill that void than by jumping on NBA 2K26. You can go to the new park because season 2 is in full swing. I'll be in the new park. I'll be in City Heights cooking up. You can pick up new rewards in my team. Or you can continue styling out the ultimate my player with this season's unlocks and cap breakers. I'm telling you, these cap breakers are making my players so dangerous. I've got a few builds going on. I've got a KD build, I've got a LaMelo Ball build, and now I've got an Al Horford build. You think it's crazy till you see me in the rec. I'll be grabbing all the balls, I'll be making plays for my teammates, I'll be knocking down them shots. Listen, come and mess with me on NBA 2K26. Season 2 is available for everyone, so go get an update downloading while you're listening to this episode of the Hoop Genius podcast, where we brought Bobby Marks to the show. If you don't know Bobby, he worked in NBA front offices for 20 years. He's been an insider with ESPN for a hot minute now. He shared with you some industry insights and secrets. We went behind the scenes on the famous Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett trade to the Brooklyn Nets because Bobby was a part of that trade happening. He gives the keys into how you can get a job in the NBA if you aspire to do something like that, or even a job in the media. He shared with us so much knowledge on the salary cap, how teams are going to be building their roster moving forward. This is a must listen. I love having these guests on. They really be putting the genius part in Hoop Genius. I just be bringing the vibes at this point. Anyway, I appreciate all of you. Please do subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star review and a rating, and enjoy the episode. You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast brought to you by NBA 2K26. It's myself, Mo Mootsy, as always, joining me, the legendary coach Brendan Sir, and we've got another special guest for you, a man who is putting the genius into Hoop Genius today because he's an expert with anything to do with the salary cap, cap space, all of those financial sides of things in the NBA. He was a front office member for 20 years. Since then, he's had an illustrious media career. That is Mr. Bobby Marks. Bobby, thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. How are we doing?
We all good?
Bobby and I have known, we're both New Jersey guys. We've known each other for 30 years. We both had the honor of working with our friend and legendary of a man, but legendary human, and Willis Reed. And that was something that we share. But Bob is one of the best guys. I always tell him that if I ever owned a team, he'd be the first guy I hired because he knows how to build a team. And I appreciate him so much.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's 30. This is my 30th NBA season. I feel old just saying that. But every year, I always say every year has a different story to it, right?
Yes.
Year is different.
I'm on 47.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 30 years alive so far. So you guys are way ahead of me.
All right. We don't need to hear from you, young buck. All
right. Well, Bobby, you know, most people know you now. If you haven't heard of Bobby, then you're not really a huge NBA fan. If you're a casual fan, you've probably seen Bobby from when he's on ESPN breaking down. Anytime there's a trade or a free agent signing, he's the man they go to break down all the financial implications. Anytime there's a move, I see Bobby making YouTube videos at like 2 a.m. New York time. Anytime there's a crazy trade happening in the NBA. But let's take it back to the start of your journey.
Because
you began as an intern with the New Jersey Nets, not the Brooklyn Nets. Back then it was the New Jersey Nets. What was your basketball career or experience up to that point?
Well, I actually played football in college, American football in college. And I needed to do an internship I went to Marist College. It's up in Poughkeepsie, New York. I needed to do an internship. My grades were not great my first 2 years, and I kind of started to figure things out my junior and senior year. I needed to do an internship. I was able to get an internship working with the Nets in public relations at the time, and basically turned that internship into another internship, a second one working for Willis Reed, who was the general manager at the time. And then when they couldn't kick me out in January of 96, they said, all right, let's keep you on board and we're going to pay $18,000-$19,000 a year. And I was like, this is awesome. Back then we were talking about this before we got on, basketball departments were not as big as they are now. We had 10 people, I think, total in our whole department. So it gave me the opportunity as an intern to really work kind of like a full-time job, whether it be inputting scouting reports or doing all these, working with the trainers and equipment guys and all these different, working with Willis, all got me an opportunity to learn how the basketball world worked. Ironically, the person who helped, and this is what I always tell young people, you know, about networking and meeting people. And, you know, the person who got me the internship, who was selling tickets at the time, his name is Scott O'Neill. And Scott is the commissioner of LIV Golf now. Mm-hmm. Scott was selling tickets. He was calling you out dinner and say, come see Shaq Penny play Derek Coleman in a six pack. You know, like that was his role. And now, and that is the beauty of sports as far as, you know, as far as meeting people and networking and taking that to another level. But I really didn't start learning like salary cap and the intricacies and roster building and free agency probably until 2000 when Rod Thorne came on. Rod is the man who, you know, was in Chicago and Michael Jordan was drafted. And that is where we had some really good years. We went to the playoffs 6 years in a row and two NBA finals. And then Billy King came in 2010. But that is kind of my journey as far as breaking into sports. It's a lot. I always tell, I had a call this morning with a student at Marist, you know, like people trying to break into sports. And I say, there's more opportunities for people now, but there's just so many more people who want to do it. For me, I did an internship. We had 30 people in our internship class in the summer of 95, and 29 out of the 30 went back to college. I am the only one who hung around, and I wound up, you know, parlaying that into a full-time job.
What were the steps? Because you ultimately, you became the assistant general manager of the Nets, but what were the steps in between intern and assistant GM?
Everything. I mean, I learned how to draw up contracts. I was not a lawyer. We were using outside law firm and we didn't want to, it was too expensive. I learned that. From that, I would go to Newark Airport when the team would arrive at night and warm up their cars when they landed. Our trainer would call me and he'd say, hey, we're leaving O'Hare, Chicago O'Hare. We're going to touch down at Newark at so-and-so. And then I'd have all the keys and I would get in my car. I was living at home and I would go to the airport and I'd warm up every person's car on the travel party. So when they landed, they can get in the car, they can take off and they can get home. But I did everything from ordering equipment to, as I said, scouting and booking travel and catering and the buses and everything in between. And then also I started learning the salary cap. I'm not a lawyer. I self-taught myself everything as far from the CBA standpoint. But that is kind of how that was like my journey into learning how everything worked in basketball operations.
That's a truly inspirational story because most NBA fans, when they think about who's running teams and who should be running teams, they often think it's like former pros are the best people equipped for it. But, you know, you've gone from going to college and interning as a former American football player all the way up to the assistant GM level. So that's super inspirational for a bunch of, you know, sports fans out there who want to break into the industry. If you had to give one piece of advice to a young person who is trying to get involved in an NBA front office, what would that advice be?
Don't make it transactional. Don't make relationships transactional. Build relationships. A lot of my relationships with teams, people who work for teams and agents are, I'm not calling them because I need something. You can always call them and just have a conversation about anything. That is probably the biggest message that I would have is don't make things transactional. Eventually, like I always give the example, when I was in Brooklyn, we were Brooklyn then, 2014, this is the year we had Pierce and Garnett and Darren Williams and Joe Johnson in that group. We needed a shooting guard. And we had studied Marcus Thornton, who played in Sacramento, shooter from LSU. And Pete D'Alessandro and I had who was the GM of the Kings at the time, had a relationship. We just knew each other. A lot of us grew up together in the business. Like we all came through it. And I called Pete and I said, hey, how is your kid's soccer game over the week? You know, we just talked, right? I didn't say, hey, I need a shooting guard, man. What can you do? You know,
yeah.
We just, and then finally like 15 minutes in, I go, hey, Pete, And I go, what are you going to do with Marcus Thornton? You guys aren't playing that much. Like, they were at it. They were in the lottery. I said, you know, we really need a shooting guard. He goes, what would you do? I said, oh, we'd give you Reggie Evans and Jason Terry and maybe a future second. I think I might do that. Let me get back to you the next morning. Like, that is how the crux of relationships, and when you think of, like, trades, how trades come about, it's the relationship business. So my biggest piece of advice is just don't make it transactional when you talk to people.
Bobby, you're one of the very best teachers there are now. And, when you went to Marist, and we've talked about this over the years, you weren't a great student. It wasn't important. Football was more important than that. But what I think, and this is where colleges, I think, really fall short, is that the things that they were offering, no offense to Marist, but weren't interesting you then. But then all of a sudden, you come into a thing, even though you weren't a basketball guy, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, and now the environment of, you have to know math, you have to know legal documents, all of a sudden you're inspired to learn.
Yeah.
And I think we learn when we want to learn. And then you kept growing to now, there is no one better at what you do than this, in this field. Okay, you self-taught yourself, but who along the way helps you in learning? Is it the Players Association where you're calling Ron, who's their legal counsel? Is it NBA lawyers in the NBA office, a combination of? How does one learn once you get to that spot?
I think you learn by examples, and I think you learn case study, things that have happened before in the past, and you kind of apply that to real life situations right now. None of us are perfect with the collective bargaining agreement, but we've gone through for me, 20 years in a front office and the last 9 or 10 in the media world, where we've when situations arise, I can talk about it because, hey, I've lived through this experience before, and this is how we dealt with it. The CBA is, I always call every CBA like an amendment to the current, so for me, I came in with the 1995 one, and then we had 2000, 2005, and then 2000, so everything has kind of been amendment, and you really don't learn until you really just go through real life exercises. Like, I created this document in December, and it's free. You can download it on sportsbusinessclassroom.com, where we take every transaction that's happened in the NBA since mid-December. And I'll go in every day and I'll update it, and we'll put the transaction in the team, and then we'll apply it to how it relates to this collective bargaining agreement. And we'll use the rules of the CBA and apply that, even if a guy just signs a 10-day, and we'll explain to you what the actual rules are. And I remember doing SportsCenter. This is my first year, and I was doing it. And when you do TV, they're saying, we need 45 seconds of your best stuff. And I'm like, man, how do you get 45 seconds when you're talking about the CBA, right? And I remember doing it, and I was talking about the Bird exception, which is basically gives you the ability to retain your own free agents and exceed the salary cap. And I remember talking about it, and our host, Nicole Briscoe, she's like, nobody knows what you're talking about. No, John Smith at home has no idea what to, you have to explain, you have to simplify it and explain it. So for me, that's that is always, I always have that in the back of my mind when I'm up there on a touchscreen or I'm up there sitting. I did TV today talking about the Heat and their salary and their roster, giving them my best stuff in 2 minutes and how I can kind of really just simplify. But it's a lot of it's just going through, there might be something happened tonight that it's never happened before. And now I'm picking up the phone and I'm calling my network of people. Hey, run through this situation for me. Am I missing something here? So that is kind of, I was not I wasn't a good math student, but I deal with numbers all day.
Yep.
But I love how it, I love the numbers part of it as far as how it relates to, I work off a spreadsheet. There's nobody inputting sal. I'm doing everything by hand, right? I'm to hand anything. I am, I created a, I love doing my own research and just studying. And, for me, I have a doc that I created in August, and I did this last year. I call it a basketball diary, where I go in every day and I add my notes, my thoughts about what happened last night, and I can go through it. And maybe there's something popped analytically. You know, maybe Chicago's bench has been really good. And because, you know, as we get older, I can't remember as much things, but maybe in December, I'm going to go back and be like, man, Chicago's 14-4. Why are they playing so well? Well, wait a minute. They're averaging, you know, 45 points per bench. And I can go back and do all that. And when I'm talking and having conversations, everything is really just kind of fresh in my mind.
That's amazing that you keep all these notes and these resources. I'm just looking at the transaction sheet. Like, you've already got the Mac McClung contract, which was signed like less than 24 hours since we were recording.
Let me interject. The people at Marist College, which is a great school, they're bragging about Bobby that he was one of the very best students that they ever attended. Look what an education does for you now.
Well, it's even like, you know, I talked Tim Murray, who's their AD, and we had a conversation because we don't have a Hall of Fame.
No way.
Nope. We've had a lot of Rick Smits, right?
Rick Smits,
Duncan Dutchman. And so we're talking about it, and he's asking me if I'm interested in being on the committee. And I said, well, who else is going to be on? And he starts listening to people. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, you know, we got some heavy hitters, you know, who went to Marist, whether it be Ian O'Connor or Brandon Tier, you know, guys who have been in the sports world and stuff like that. But no, Marist prepared me for, you know, I always give credit, like, because I played football there. We had a coach named Jim Parody. And Coach P was there forever. And as I said, like, my grades were not good my first 2 years, where I couldn't play my sophomore year. But Coach P, there's always that one person in your life that just stays on top of you. And back in 1993, we had voicemail on a whole, you know, a phone that's plugged into the wall, right? And I remember coming home from, I was working a summer job, and Coach P says, hey, got your grades, you're academically ineligible. Congrats, see you in August. Like there are always people in your life that you relate to because they've given you a chance or an opportunity, and they've kind of been in your corner.
That's awesome. Amazing. You know, with everything you do now with the CBA, and I want to talk about how that impacts everything that happens.
Yeah.
Because a lot of fans don't understand how that impacts trades. But I just want to go back to what you talked about, you know, working through real life examples.
Yeah.
And as you can probably tell from the hoodie I'm wearing or the jersey behind me, I'm a huge Boston Celtics fan.
Sure.
And you were involved in one of the biggest trades in Boston Celtics history.
Yeah.
I know, you know, sometimes I read the replies to your tweets on Twitter.
I know.
And fans love bringing that up. But I just wanted to give the audience an insight into how NBA trades come together, because sometimes there's trades where, you know, you guys are circling a guy and you really want to get this player. Sometimes an owner comes along and says that he wants this player, and, you know, sometimes you get approached with a deal.
Yeah.
Can you take us behind the scenes of that deal?
Yeah. So that's one of the biggest things. It is. I always, you know, people, you know, we live in a social media world where it could be dangerous. And like, if you're going to argue with people, it's going to be a losing argument and stuff. I always tease people. I'm like, you know, we made that trade in 2013. Tatum and Brown were like in sixth grade at the time. We didn't trade them. There was a pick. Unfortunately, the pick turned into them. Those guys, like, I would feel worse if I said, like, we just traded Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And they were like, listen, no offense to the people with the Clips, like Shea, like they traded Shea. Yep. Like, they didn't think he was probably going to be where he is now. But that was actually a live body that got traded. Mm-hmm. We traded the rights. But, you know, the Celtic deal, that came about in February of 2012-13 season. And Boston was not playing great. You started to see that this team had aged. And they had reached out to me about Pierce. That is the initial framework of it. And it was originally Pierce for Chris Humphreys, another player, and a future first. That was the framework of that. And they started winning a couple games, and then around the trade deadline, like, no, we're gonna sit on this, and maybe we'll talk about it in the offseason. So we play the Bulls in the first. During that year, Avery Johnson got let go. We hired PJ Carlissimo gets elevated and did a terrific job. I mean, he's like 34-19. And we lose to Chicago in the first round in seven games, a decimated Bulls team. And it was like, probably the worst thing that could happen, because we probably thought our roster was a lot better than maybe what it was. And we let PJ gets let go. Jason Kidd comes in as a head coach. And Jason was just playing for the Knicks. And we already had Brooke Lopez, and we already had Darren Williams and Joe Johnson. And Boston calls around Memorial Day, which is in May, end of May. And they said, hey, would you guys think about the Pierce deal again? I said, yeah, we would. So that was the framework. And then what happened, where it snowballed, was the week of the draft, Doc Rivers gets traded from the Celtics to the Clippers. And it, you know, and then all of a sudden they call us and they'd be like, hey, we would be interested in Garnett. And that's where it, like, so now you're adding Garnett. Now we're adding Jarrell Wallace. Now we got to add a pick to get rid of Jarrell Wallace. Like, all these different intricacies, and it just blew up. And I think we all learned a valuable lesson. Like, when you're doing these deals, you don't worry about not having a safety net. Like, you think you're going to be good for a long time. So the thinking in Brooklyn was, we're going to be really good 13-14. We're going to be a playoff team in 14-15. We could probably keep our head above water in 15-16. And then when the summer of 2016 came, the big cap spike, when that TV money, that's when Durant went to Golden State, we would be in a position in Brooklyn, 3 years of an established team, playoff team, where we can basically kind of just retool and basically have a pick as far as free agents. What happened was, we get through the 13-14 season, we lose in the second round to Miami in five, we have a payroll of like $180 million, which was high then, luxury tax. And then ownership says, you know what? Can you guys do that at half the cost? So then we don't resign Paul Pierce. He goes to the Wizards. We eventually trade Kevin Garnett. We still had Darren Williams and Joe Johnson. Brooke was coming off a broken foot. And it's like, oh my God, we just traded three unprotected first. And that is the culmination. We get into the playoffs that year. We lose to a really good Atlanta team, who was the one seed. And then, you know, I transitioned after that year. And then what I always say, what happened is Sean Marks, who's their GM, comes in. And when Sean comes in, he has no relationship at all to what had just happened. Like, he wasn't chasing that deal where he says, oh my God, we traded all this. We got to at least be in the playoffs. We got to be in a play-in. We at least got to be a 500 team. He's like, nope, I got no relation. We're going to scrap it to the bottom. We're going to build through all these, you know, we're going to find these, you know, the Joe Harrises and the Caris LeVerts and these Spencer Dinwiddie, under the radar guys. And they bottomed out, and those picks turned into, into Tatum and Brown.
Yeah, it was quite a time. And it's interesting how hindsight being 2020, as a Celtics fan, I remember that trade happening. It's like my world had ended, because I'm like,
well, you know, it's crazy.
Like, what the hell?
What's crazy is, if you go back and you read, you know, I hate when people grade stuff. I'm like, how the heck did people, you know, if you go back and read the grades, I think there were a lot of A's. I think there were a lot of A's with that grade.
Because we got Marshawn Brooks and Chris Humphreys, right? And I'm like, what? We went from being one of the best teams to being, now we got Chris Humphreys starting a power forward. Like, respectfully to him, it is what it is. Coach Sir, go ahead.
Bobby, when you, when it happens to every one of us, when you're either coaching or in the front office, inevitably ownership changes, GMs change, different people.
Yeah.
And we lose our jobs. Happened to me several times. Yourself. Explain.
Oh.
And this is, I think, so important to people in life, especially now what's going on in the world, where one door closes and you have to be open-minded to figure out what else can you do. And one of our dearest friends, one of our Jersey guys, he's a Connecticut guy, but he wrote for our paper, The Record. Woj comes in, and you have a relationship with him, and how it really is. In my thinking, I think it's changed your life.
Oh my God, for the better. Yeah,
I don't mean that.
No, I mean, listen, I still remember the Tuesday in May after the day after Memorial Day, getting a call from Billy King and saying, hey, let's meet up and talk like off-season stuff. and walking in there and him being there and the head of HR with him in a conference room with a folder. And it's like almost like a hit, you know, like a mob hit. And I'm like, oh boy.
We can say that we're from Jersey.
Yeah. And basically saying, and when you do something for 20 years, that's the only thing you know. Like, it's the only thing I knew coming out of college. And I had two young kids that my kids now are 19 and 16. I had two young kids at home. And, you know, the Nets took care of me and they paid me for a little while. But like thinking like, what are you going to do? What do you do now? And I drove home and I went to, you know, one of our famous diners on Route 3. And I had cheese fries and gravy and just stuffed my face and did all this stuff. And it's like, I had like this, it's almost like in mourning, right? When someone passes away, the positive for me is I had kind of been prepared because I had built up a relationship with Mike Tannenbaum, who was the GM of the Jets back then and Dolphins and now works at ESPN, and Omar Minaya, who was the GM of the Mets and now is with the Yankees. And we had taught, like they said to me, like, you're going to go, it's going to happen. And here's what, and basically they told me what was going to happen. It's the grieving stages of either when you lose somebody in your life or when you lose your job. And it's the first week, what's going to happen the first week? Everybody's going to call you. You're going to feel like you're still working. The adrenaline, you're talking to people, what happened, explaining, blah, blah, blah. And people always say, hey, if you need anything, call me. Then it's the second week, it's like your friends and people who are on vacation. And then by the third week, it's your family. That's it. Because everybody goes back to their own world, right? Like they go back to their own job. And, you know, for back then it was June and the draft was happening and free agency. And Brendan, there were times I left my phone in the car.
Wow.
That I used to get.
No do not disturb mode back then.
Nope. I used to get 30 calls a day. I'd get two, one. So I was like, what do you do now? And I always thought like I would always go back working for a team. And then I took a month off and took my kids to school and became a dad and did all these different things I wasn't able to do. And I said, I got to start doing things. And back then, you know, nobody was really going on Twitter, which was, you know, somewhat saner then in 2015 than it is now. So I said, I'm going to start breaking down how trades and front offices and 140 characters and all these different things, how it works. And I started building up a following. And I started doing a little TV and I did radio and I did all these different things. And it created this niche of people wanting the thirst of transactions. People love transactions, roster building. And I had known Woj when he worked for the Bergen Record. And I saw him on the concourse of Las Vegas. And really the only reason why I was in Las Vegas was an agent named Darren Matsubara, who works for Wasserman, said, hey, you've been really good to me when you were at the Nets. He's Brook Lopez's agent. I'm going to fly you out and just keep you in the mix, right? Just keep you in the mix. Get to see people. Because once you fall off the map, fall off the map, people forget about you, right? Man, and I remember
different to what my friends told me to come to Vegas for.
And so I'm on the concourse and Woj sees me. He goes, man, I really like what you're doing. And, you know, you're doing all these tweets and these breakdowns and all this stuff. And he says, yeah, we're starting this group at Yahoo called The Vertical. And we need a guy who can front office background. It's myself and this 21-year-old named Shams Charania. Shams was in college at the time.
How about that?
And Chris Mannix and Jonathan Givony, Mike Schmidt's draft guys. And he's like, but you got to learn how to write. And I was like, what? I was like, 140 characters? No. He goes, No. You got to learn how to write. I did not take writing serious. I don't even think I took a writing class. I always tell people, learn how to write. So I go out to California, LA, meet with the Yahoo people. They offer me a job. Job doesn't start till January. In the meantime, I did some freelance work with Hoops Hype. And they paid me $500 an article. And my first article I ever wrote was, it was in the summer of 2015, how Golden State can land Kevin Durant in free agency.
Wow.
But Brendan, I had no idea. And Mo, I had no idea how to write. I knew I could do it in 140 characters. And I literally stared at my computer and my wife's like, what's the matter? And I was like, I don't know how to start a paragraph. I don't know how to write the intro. I don't know. And then you start word counting. And she said, just write, just throw all your ideas on a piece. Just throw them all. Like you're painting, like you're making clay. Just throw it all on there. And that's how I did it. I just threw all my ideas and then I pulled it back. And that is how I was able to kind of make this article into something that made something sense. So that is the break I got in my second life. And it has been a terrific journey. It's always a challenge. And I got to see my son is in college and he wrote the nicest letter to me when he graduated. And he was like, thank you for being present.
Wow.
Because like, I remember how like having this conversation with my wife and Brent, you know, this, like you're there at home, but you're not there.
You're not there.
You're like worrying about who's playing right now and why we've lost five in a row. And I don't feel like talking at dinner and I, you know, like all these different things and stuff like that. And so that has been, and that's, as I said, like it's opportunity, it's networking, it's people giving you a chance. It's people giving you an opportunity. And that's why I love, you know, like, listen, my DMs are open on Twitter and Instagram and all these different and LinkedIn, because I love trying, you know, listen, I'm on the back nine of this journey that we're doing and how to give back and, you know, the next sports, you know, cat person out there or someone who wants to talk basketball or anything like that. I just kind of love, I love the process of giving back.
So I'm huge on education. When I went to Montclair State University, I wanted to be a teacher. My only goal in life was to be a high school coach because my high school coach was UB Brown. Mm-hmm. So that's all I wanted to be because that was the role model. Never have, it's on my bucket list still, Bob. I've never been a high school coach. Go right into college. But I now in teaching coaches, coaching coaches, what you're doing, and I think is the most needed thing right now, of basically teaching people that have a desire to be in a front office or of the myriad jobs that we have in the league, of, and you and your staff and the people at SBC have done an incredible job. Talk about that, because I'm so big on education.
Oh man, it's the probably the most rewarding experience I've gone through, and I've done a lot. As I said, I've, you know, been to the NBA finals and worked at the NBA draft 8 years and done TV and all these great things. Met a lot of people. Like Warren Legarry, who runs Summer League in Las Vegas, reached out to me about 3 years ago about Sports Business Classroom. So Sports Business Classroom is a program that's geared towards educating the next wave of people who want to work in the NBA. Whether you want to be the next salary cap person, scouting video analytics, agent representation, media, all these different majors. And you pick a major and you come to Las Vegas for a week and we put on programming every day. I mean, we start at like 7 a.m. and we do like office hours with me. So for an hour, you could sit with me. And then throughout the day, we'll do different, like, you know, this year we did the WNBA CBA. We'll do the stuff with the Players Association. We'll do programming. Then we have a guest speaker come in every day for at lunchtime. And it's 8 hours of programming every day. And then at night, we do deep dives, which is based on your major. So if you're a salary cap major, you'll come with me for an hour or 2 hours. And we'll go through the apron and the extent, like all these different rules and kind of just help you educate. And then at the end of the week, they do the students, and it's not just 20-year-olds, it's people who maybe trying to make a change in their life, will do a mock trade deadline at the end of the week. And then they'll present on Saturday and in front of all of us. And it's been, I've texted Warren this and Albert Hall and Sergio this every time I get on the plane going home. I've done it 2 years in a row. I said, the most rewarding experience in my 30 years. The ability to give back. And I said to, when I go up there, I say, but like my goal for you is to put you in a position where you are the next general manager or the next person on TV or the next agent and put you in a position here. Because I do think we get to a point where it is so important to give back as far as what we're doing.
I think that is so incredible. And the people you mentioned out there, Warren, and they're just great guys. And they've always been about helping people. Mm. Tell me this, because this is, you know, this our podcast is all over the world, Hoop Genius, and huge in Europe, huge in the Middle East, et cetera. I'm telling you, how many people are coming to SBC each summer? It is
remarkable. Oh, my God. It is, you know, it's crazy. So we had 140 this past. We've hit the max capacity. I had my son, my 16-year-old, came out and worked for Warren on, you know, during the games and stuff. And then my wife came out for a couple of days. And it's like, if you've never been to Vegas for Summer League, it is one of the most, it's like Comic-Con for people who love like Marvel and all these, you know, all these different things. It is a wild experience and stuff like that. But it's the beauty of it is that you can walk the concourse and you could see anybody and everybody's so approachable. But yeah, it is, it's, you know, we're thinking maybe do we try to maybe branch out and do something, you know, during All-Star Week? Do we do something, you know, like we branch out different things? I love to come to Europe and do something because I do think there's a thirst of knowledge of people who want to learn how these rules work and everything like that. But yeah, it's a terrific program. We haven't started the registration yet, but you can go on sportsbusinessclassroom.com. And we have, we have the transaction guide up there. We have, 3 years ago, I put together a CBA 101 where I took the actual CBA and I don't want to say dumbed it down, but made it more legal, like less legal-ish. And we kind of explained the rules and we use real life examples of what the different, how the apron works and extensions, all these different things. And that's free. You can download it.
Bobby, let me ask you one more thing on this. I just want your opinion on outsider, insider view. I think we're going to see a downward trend in salaries for people and stuff. Could you explain why?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think we started to see
a downward trend.
I think we saw a little bit of a trend this past 2 weeks ago with the rookie extensions, where a lot of guys were being pegged in like that $24 to $25 million. What's happened is with the apron. So the apron basically it's kind of a quasi hard cap that you can't spend over if you trigger certain things along the way. Players are kind of pegged as far as they're slotted salary wise. The days of having three players on your roster making 35% of the cap is over, almost over. So you can have Shea and Jalen Williams and, Chet Holmgren on your roster because those guys, even though they're max, they're slotted differently. But if you're looking at, hey, how are we going to pay a sixth man? How are we going to pay Alex Caruso? How are we going to pay certain players on your roster? It used to be, well, do we want to just pay the luxury tax? Now it's about building rosters. You know, as far as if you were Phoenix last year and you had three players on max contracts with Durant, Beal, and Booker, and we have no draft picks, what about the other 10 players on our roster, right? So it's like, well, then we're going to sign minimums every year, and it's like you just turn this over. And it's the beauty of – I know people get tired of the apron. The beauty of the apron is it has forced teams to really understand roster construction, where you can't just go out and outspend the competition. You can't do what Golden State or maybe the Clippers have done here. And I think that's why we're going – you know, players are still – we're at $5.6 billion in player salaries. We're at $5.2 last year. Players are still going to get paid.
Yes.
But it's going to be different. Like, there's never going to be a summer of 16 where basically we just threw all this money out. And guys...
Shout out to Timothy Mozgov.
Yes, the law firm of Mozgov, Noah, and, Dang, Biombo. And Biombo made a lot of money. We're not going to see that anymore because teams are just going to be more careful as far as how they go out, spend that.
Do you think that then puts a premium on draft picks?
Because
having players committed to that rookie scale contract now, so the value, the theoretical value of a first round pick or a second round pick in a trade negotiation, for example, do you think that those now have more value in a deal where you could have previously got two or three picks, now you're maybe only going to get one?
Yeah, I wrote about it. We have an article up about what the best or what we've learned the first week. And one of the things I wrote about was AJ Mitchell in Oklahoma City. So AJ Mitchell gets drafted by the Thunder in the second round 2 years ago. He was on a two-way. And then they converted him last year. He got hurt during the year. And then they converted him at the end. And then they signed him to a three-year, almost $9 million deal this year. AJ Mitchell is ranked, I think, second or third in bench points. So among reserves. Average like 19 points a game. He's making $3 million. So there is your, like, if you want to try to combat the apron and all these spending things, there you go.
Yeah.
Right.
It's if you have coach, yeah, I talked about Ryan Rollins last week, and he's starting point guard for the Bucks. He's making $12 million over 3 years.
Yep. Exactly. If you can hit on draft picks and second round picks and maybe some of these undrafted guys and you have them on these manageable salaries, oh my God, it gives you such a Amen Thompson in Houston, who's on a rookie contract. Sar and Thompson in Detroit. Victor. All right, Victor. For the next 2 years on a rookie deal. Come on.
From your experience in the front office, do you think this is great news for people who work in player development? Because, you know, you're going to make these draft picks, right? And no one knows if they're going to be good or not before they play in the NBA, right? And you know, BJ always used to say on a show, he would say, you're not a GM until you made a bad pick, right?
Yeah.
But if you're a player development guy who specializes, like Chip Englund, who was with the Spurs, and then I think he's with the Thunder now. Do you think now the price of being a player development coach is going to skyrocket because they're going to have to hit, or they're going to have to develop, should I say, the players they do pick with these draft selections?
Oh, I think there's a high premium. I mean, look at the Wizards right now. They have 10 or 11 players on first-round rookie contracts, and you got to go 500. Right, at least with some five, you got to hit on five or six of those guys, or you're just going to start the process over again. I think it's great to draft and develop, but how do they basically turn into a NBA player? And how does that kind of, you know, like eventually Washington's going to have to be good. Like we just can't keep on doing this over and over and stuff like that. So. Yeah, so I do think it puts a premium. You know, OKC, of course, is a great example because they hit rock bottom after Paul, after the Paul George trade, and then they had Shea, and then, you know, they draft Jalen and Chet and add some piece, Cason Wallace and Lu Dort and the undrafted. And those guys, they put a premium on developing. I think the biggest thing is with younger players is don't be afraid to fail. Like, you know, like experiment with younger players with different lineups, put different players in different positions here. If you're a year where you don't think you are a playoff team or a play-in team and you have this young roster, put them in winning positions. Like put them in a, like I would, like I'm watching with the Washington Philadelphia last night on a Tuesday. And no offense to CJ McCollum and Chris Middleton. I want to see the younger kids out there. I want to see them in overtime, in a position where the game matters. Because what's going to happen likely is we're going to get to March and April. It's basically ping pong balls, right? Like they're going to be out of it likely and stuff. But that's like you learn a lot about players when, you know, when the game means a little bit more than it does in April or May, March or April.
If you had to look at all 30 teams right now in the NBA and you had to look at their cap sheets and the projections for future years, who are some of the teams you say are best positioned and some of the teams you would say are worst positioned based purely financially on the way things are structured and, of course, how it translates to the product on the court?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, some of the teams that are potential lottery teams, I think Utah is really positioned well because they have 8 or 9 guys on rookie contracts and they've got a lot of draft picks and they've got a lot of guys that are going to come off their books. I think Brooklyn, certainly, Charlotte, the Wizards. But I think cap space is a little bit fool's gold. We rarely see players. You know, Paul George was kind of the exception signing in Philadelphia. I don't know if we're going to get another summer of 2010 when LeBron and Wade and Bosh and Amari and Carlos Boozer and Joe Johnson all went to different teams. So I do think you have to be careful putting all your eggs in the basket cap space wise here. I said, you know, before the injuries and Miles Turner left, I said Indiana was probably the perfect team to build. How do you build a roster under this CBA where you have two players with Halliburton and Siakam making big money, and then everyone else is $20 million or less, and then you still have that flexibility to kind of add, you know, Nembhard, Nesmith, TJ McConnell, players like that. The Thunder are going to be a good case study because they potentially could be a second apron team next year, but where they're different is they could potentially have 4 first-round picks.
Yep.
Like, you can debunk that, right? Like, you just, when Lu Dort gets expensive, maybe then you have this guy, Cason Wallace. And then when Cason Wallace gets expensive, it might be a pick in 2029. So, yep. Although, like, I think if you're looking at teams that are high cost, you have to look at where they are draft-wise, where they are. The Cavaliers will be a good example. Cleveland's the highest paid. They've spent the most money. You know, they've got Donovan and Darius Garland and Jared Allen and Evan Mobley locked up for long term. Their draft picks are a little sketchy there. What happens if they lose in the second round and stuff? Is that team going to have to be broken up and everything like that? So, kind of a lay of the land. I think having the draft picks is certainly certainly important and everything.
Bobby, last question for me is simply this. In your new career, which is now 10 years old, but in your new life, you work 12 months a year on this. But in your NBA life now, give me the most exciting times of the year for you when the action's happening, where you're now this is now where all of your talents get to come in.
Probably the draft and free agency. Yep. The trade deadline is that's a little bit hit or miss. And, you know, a trade deadline is kind of a buildup from now until February, I guess early February here. I would say that the draft free agency, because there's like the writing component, as you had mentioned, Mo, like the offseason guides we put out there, that being part of the draft coverage. So we start with the combine. One of the things I do on a side with agents where I help their draft prospects prepare when they interview. So we do like 70 guys in like 3 weeks helping prepare. That's a crazy, crazy 3 week stretch, like 8 guys a day, hour each, like a lot. Wow. The draft, as you said, free agency is crazy because it's like our Super Bowl. We prepare for that and that can go all summer. So that is probably like that stretch, that April to like mid-July stretch. And then we got Sports Business Classroom 2 in there. Yeah. It's probably like, and then it's like, yeah, the hardest, and you know this, coach, is like when you have like, you're doing this and it's like nonstop. And then you get to August and it's like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
You know, it's like the shutdown, right?
A few weeks off.
Yeah. Like, how do I talk to my wife again? Like, you know, like, how do we do that and stuff? So I think for me, that is the most exciting. The part, early part of the season is exciting for me. And not because of trades and free agency, is because everybody thinks they got a chance.
Yes.
Like, it's a clean slate. Nobody's lost 9 games in a row. Nobody's looking at the standings saying, oh my God, we got to start tanking. Chicago's 3-0. You know, like some of these teams that we maybe, Charlotte's 2-2. Maybe these teams that we didn't think were great think they have a chance and stuff.
That is awesome. That's great stuff.
I got a couple questions. One's, you know, for our listeners here. What percentage, if you had to put a percentage on it, how many of the deals done pertaining to trades in the NBA are for financial reasons rather than actual player reasons?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the luxury tax used to be a priority to get under. So we see Team X trading John Smith for nothing, and they're getting under the luxury tax because you're getting a distribution back at the end of the day. I think there is a priority with that, as far as as you mentioned, there's kind of like that financial component there. There is the Luka trade, for example. Nobody realized if we were on Jeopardy 10 years from now, he said, what was named the third team involved in the Luka trade to the Lakers? And nobody will probably say the Utah. And why did Utah get involved? Because they were able to pick up some cash and they got a pick. And so I always say like the third team is always the team that kind of is the middleman that always gets the deal done. Charlotte last year is involved in Karl Anthony Towns. They didn't trade for Karl Anthony Towns, but New York had to dump salary to make the money work. And they wound up getting three seconds in cash and all these other things here. So I think when you're looking at the trades that happen financially related, it's usually that third team that's involved because the money doesn't work if you're just doing two teams.
And my final question is that Luka trade you just mentioned.
Yeah.
I remember when that happened, I called BJ straight away. I said, BJ, we got to do an episode, right? It was like 3-4 in the morning, my time, right?
Yeah.
And I was just about to fall asleep. I got this notification. I looked at it. I said, this isn't real. All right, check that as real. Call BJ. He didn't believe me. I called Scott. He's at dinner with his wife. I said, Scott, come home right now. And we did it in the emergency episode. But what was your reaction when that trade? Because I think that trade, for as long as the NBA continues for the next thousands of years, if the world survives thousands more years, I don't think we're ever going to see a trade that stunned the entire world like that.
I don't think so. I mean, you never say never in this crazy world. I look back on that week. I remember talking with Shams that week, and he says, Dallas might have, they have something with like the Lakers regarding like Maxi Kleber, you know, like something random. And then we broke a trade that afternoon. It was really a minor trade with the Clippers in Utah. And I remember during the trade deadline week, I'll call him at night and check in with Shams and be like, anything, you know, I need to know, like blah, blah, blah. And I called him at like 11:45. I said, anything going on? He goes, no, the Knicks Laker game had just finished. And I said, anything? He goes, no, nothing. It's pretty quiet. And then like 10 minutes later, man. And I call him. I'm like, is this real? He's like, this is real. I can't believe it. Like blah, blah, blah. And so I call Luka's agent, who was Bill Duffy and David Mondras. And I go, did your guys just get traded? And they're like, what are you talking about? And I think it just caught, I think the magnitude of the greatness of Luka, Anthony Davis is a heck of a player too. Lakers had just won a game in New York. Luka was up for this Supermax. He gets traded, he doesn't get it. I just think it caught us all. And it made us, I think it made people think, and it opened up people's eyes that anybody could be traded in this world. Probably Jokic, probably not, and shit. You know, there's probably a handful of guys, I would think.
But Luka was in that category before the trade.
Yeah, Luka was in that category. Yeah. Like, if I was writing my trade guide, I would have him off the board.
Yeah.
And stuff. So
right now, like, Wembanyama is the only player that you could say, and even then, after Luka's trade, you never know anymore.
Yeah, and I think, and so that's why, like, when we're talking about, like, the media world and educating people, it would have been easy for me to go on 7 a.m. SportsCenter Sunday morning and bash the Mavericks and jump on the hot take parade, right? Mm. So I went on there, and I remember doing it, and the producer said, what do you want to talk about? I want to say why this might make sense for Dallas. Will it make sense? I don't, probably not. But I wanted to say, and that's the goal when I do this, is try to give my vision of like both teams. Yeah. This is why it may make sense for Dallas, where they're going to go big with AD and Derek Lively or Daniel Gafford. They still have Kyrie. They added two picks, like all these different things. Like, so that is like when you're educating people, it just can't be like a hot take. Worst trade in NBA history. So when we wrote an article, it was actually, I think, the most read article I had last year on ESPN. We wrote an article in April. This is when Luka went back to Dallas. The that game, and we wrote what all 29 teams, what they could have offered in a Luka trade.
Oh, I remember this, yeah.
And it was like kind of like what you've learned and what based on, and it was eye opening because it wasn't like ever. Because I remember being on TV with Mike Greenberg on Get Up, and him saying like anybody could have made the trade. I get it. I understand the rationale, but when you break it down and you look at what every team could have offered, it's not as what you might think and everything like that. So that's, as we said before, like that's when I'm talking on TV or I'm writing, it's like, I'm trying to split it down the middle here to give kind of both, you know, the perception of both there.
Well, that's Bobby great. Marks, thank you for your time, sir. We really appreciate you joining us and sharing your insights. It's been absolutely amazing for not just myself as a young person in this industry, but I know all of our listeners at home really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. So thank you very much. Where can the people check out Sports Business Classroom, and where can they check out more of your stuff?
Yeah, you can go on sportsbusinessclassroom.com. You can download both PDFs. As I said, they're free. ESPN.com. You can go on. My Twitter handle is at BobbyMarks42, same as Instagram. So we've got content, videos as soon as we get in the transaction game and everything like that. But you can catch everything there.
Appreciate you. Want to see Bobby in Las Vegas, like I'm going to be in July. It's beautiful. It's only about 114 degrees Fahrenheit for our friends over there. They'll enjoy the weather, especially the way it is right now in London.
Inside in Las Vegas, all that air conditioning is colder than London is right now. But appreciate you both, fellas. As I said at the start, we're going to keep bringing you these special guest episodes. So make sure you subscribe, whether that's YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoop Genius podcast so that you never miss a show. I appreciate each and every one of you for listening. And until next time, get buckets.